Today I'm going to talk about BStore, which is a browser-based storage system for BStore makes use storage user-centric and allows users' web applications to easily share data with each other. This is joint work with Priya Gupta and Nikolai Zildovich. So let's start with an example. Consider user Alice, who wants to use online applications to manage her photographs. This is a pretty common usage scenario these days. Let's imagine Alice uses Flickr to store her online photographs, and she edits them with a photo editor application. She uses a photo viewer application to view her photographs, and finally uses Shutterfly to print her photos. Let's see what options Alice has today to manage her photos. Most web applications today come with their own storage backends that are isolated from other applications. And in this model, one option Alice has is to use manual management of her online photos. And here, Alice can upload her photographs to Flickr manually and use it as photo storage. And when she wants to use a photo editor to edit the photographs, she can download the photographs from Flickr, upload them to the photo editor, and edit her photos. And once she's done editing the photos, she can manually sync them back to Flickr. So once Alice uses these applications for a while, you can see that all these applications will have a copy of Alice's photographs. So clearly, there are several problems with this approach. First, the user has to manually upload and download the photographs, and the user will have to manually sync these photographs, and this can be pretty tedious, pretty cumbersome, and error-prone. And second, the web application developer is forced to maintain backend servers, storage servers for the data, even though applications like the photo editor really may not need their own storage backends. And finally, there's a lot of redundant uploads and downloads going on. There's a lot of redundant network transfers going on here. Recently, there have been some attempts to solve this problem using web services APIs. And many applications today use web services to export their data and use an OAuth as an authorization mechanism. In this world, Alice would upload her photographs to Flickr. And when she needs to use the photo editor application, the editor would request the photos from Flickr through the editor's backend server here. And at this point, Flickr would ask Alice for permission. Once Alice grants the permission, it would return the data back to the photo editor through the photo editor server. So I'm skipping over a few details of OAuth here for the sake of simplicity, but this should give you a flavor of overall how the OAuth flow works. So this this approach solves some of the problems with the manual management approach. Primarily, it avoids the it relieves the user from having to manually upload and download photographs, and also gives the applications a mechanism for automatically syncing the data. And it in some scenarios it also avoids the redundant network transfers, uploads and downloads going on. But it still has several limitations, several problems. First, the application developer still needs to maintain servers for doing this data transfer. So the editor application still needs to have an editor backend server so that it can relay the data from Flickr to the editor application. And this also means that the sharing applications have to be online to be able to share the data. Second, the user is constrained by the access control mechanism, the granularity of the access control offered by the application itself. And the user cannot control, cannot do it at a more finer grain granularity if she chooses to do so. And finally, this mechanism has been developed for, designed for two-party sharing. So for example, Flickr exporting its photos to an editor application. And it works well in those scenarios, but if you want to have editor go and delegate a subset of these access rights to, let's say, Shutterfly, this doesn't work as well. So we've designed a browser-based storage system called BStore to address these issues, and our solution is based on a few key ideas. The first idea is to move all the data sharing into the browser. So by doing this, We get several advantages. The application developers do not have to maintain the servers for data access or for data storage. And we can support offline sharing. We avoid redundant network transfers. And the second advantage is a common set of storage mechanisms, including a unified namespace that applications can use to name data, a common data access API, and a common delegation mechanism which users and applications can use to delegate access to other applications. To give you a high-level overview of how BStore works, so we have these backend servers which actually store the data, and we have these applications running inside the browser which need access to the data. So to facilitate the transfer of data from the backend servers to the applications, we have a file system component, a JavaScript component running inside the browser, which exports the data to the applications using a BStore API. And we have a multiplexing component, which we call the file system manager or the FS manager, which routes the requests from the applications to the right file system. Note that some applications like Shutterfly may need backend servers for reasons other than storage. So for example, Shutterfly might have its own a print server to which it sends its, using which it prints its photos. Before I move on, one point I want to mention here is that I use common applications like Flickr and Shutterfly to illustrate, for the purposes of illustration here. But note that we did not actually port Flickr to use the BStore API. So let's see how Alice's workflow works in this model. Alice would use the Flickr uploader UI, and Flickr uses the BStore API to store the data in the Flickr file system. The data gets stored in the backend, and when the photo editor needs to get access to these photos, it again goes through the same BStore API to access these photos. So all these components in the browser are running. Each of them is basically a piece of JavaScript code running in its own browser window, and they talk to each other using the BStore API. The file system component running in the browser can talk it to the backend using a file system specific API. Overall, this architecture provides several benefits. The benefits to the user are that it provides a user-centric storage, which means first, the user's data, all the user's applications can use access the user's data using the same API. And the user gets to control which applications can get access, which data using an access control mechanism I'm going to describe shortly. And finally, our design does not require any browser changes, which means the user does not have to install any new piece of software. So there are several benefits to applications, too. Applications can share data with each other using the BStore API. And as I mentioned earlier, the application developer doesn't have to maintain any backend servers for either storing or processing data. And this also enables offline sharing as long as the file system component running in the browser can cache the file system data. And our design is egalitarian in the sense that the applications themselves can take their part of their storage, export it using the BStore API, and also use the same access control mechanism to delegate rights to other applications. So until now, I've described to you our motivation for this work, why current solutions don't solve the problem, and given you an overview of BStore. In the rest of this talk, I'm going to describe more our contributions in this work. First, I'll get into a little bit more details about the design, including the file system API and tagging mechanism that we use to both organize file system as well as for access control. I'm going to give you a little bit more detail about our implementation, present some evaluation results, compare with related work, and conclude. On to the file system API. Each file system in BStore has a flat file structure. And the core file system API consists of four calls here. The create call creates a file in a particular file system with a set of initial tags. I'm going to describe tagging in a little bit. And the set and the get calls operate an entire files. Set writes the entire file and get reads the file and returns the data. And finally, deletes the file. Many web applications use a get and set model for accessing their data today, and we believe that our data model, the BStore file system API, would work well for many web applications. So BStore is a shared file system, which means that multiple applications can be accessing the data at the same time. So to allow applications to detect concurrent modifications, we have a versioning scheme. And every file has a version number attached to it, and most API calls return the current version number. So for example, so we see that the create, set, and get would return the current version number as part of the return values. And we the set, while it's writing to the file, increments the version number. And we implement a compare and swap like functionality so that applications can use that functionality to detect concurrent modifications by other applications. So set and delete take an extra argument called the matching version number, or optional argument. And if the application sets that matching version number, the calls fail if the current version number does not match that version number. Now that I've described the file system API, I'm going to describe the access control mechanism and the file system organization. But first, let me get into what are the principles in the system. So as I mentioned before, each application here is running in its own browser window. And in a sense, its own protection domain, protected by the browser's same origin policy. And the principles for each of those protection domains is the URL origin of that piece of JavaScript code running. So for example, Flickr's principle is flickr.com here. This is the same principles that browser uses when applying the same origin policy, and does not make sense to use any more fine-grained principles like entire URLs, because the browser does not protect two URLs from the same origin. So though each BStore file system is a flat namespace, BStore provides a tagging mechanism using which applications and users can organize their file system. For example, the Flickr could tag these set of photographs with the location at which the photos have been taken. Or it could tag these photographs on the left with a print tag, presumably indicating that it would print them at some point of time. So we can have a separate application like, let's say, the photo viewer tagging these set of files on the right with a print tag. And to disambiguate different applications setting these tags, we partition the tag namespace using the principle which created the tag. So the print tag set by Flickr would actually be flickr.com/print, and the print tag set by photo viewer would be viewer.com/print. The user can also set tags in on files in BStore, and the user interacts with the BStore file system using a file manager interface. And this file manager application is running in the same domain as the FS manager. So, if let's say the user wants to tag both these photographs with the Christmas tag, let's say they were taken during Christmas vacation, and so she can use the file manager interface to do that. The entire tags API consists of like four calls: set and remove tag, add and delete tags from the file, get tag returns the entire list of tags in a particular file, and search searches a particular file system for all files matching a tag expression. So search is the only mechanism that is available in BStore to look up files for applications. BStore provides an access control mechanism that's also based on tagging, and applications and users can use specify access control rules that we call delegation rules. And the file system manager maintains a table of all these delegation rules. Each entry in the delegation or each rule consists of four fields. The from field specifies the principal who added the delegation rule. The to field specifies the principal to whom the rights are being given, and the tags specify the list of files to which this delegation rule applies. So for example, let's say the user wants to give access to the photo viewer application, all access to her Christmas photographs. She can add a delegation rule which says fsmanager.com domain, which is the principal of the user, delegates to viewer.com, which is the principal of the photo viewer, read access rights on all files tagged with a Christmas tag. And once that rule is applied, the photo viewer gets access to all the photos on the left, the Christmas photographs of the user. So one, the photo viewer can in turn go and delegate a subset of these rights to the Shutterfly application. And let's say it wants to delegate rights to the print, the files marked with the print tag to Shutterfly. To do that, it adds a delegation rule which indicates that the viewer.com delegates to shutterfly.com, which is the Shutterfly's principal, read access on all files marked with the print tag. And once that rule is added, Shutterfly gets access to the files in the middle here. One point to note here is that the viewer would not be able to delegate access to files that it itself cannot read, itself does not have access in the first place. So to illustrate that here, let's say the user has a private photograph that she marked private, and she did not delegate access to those photographs to the photo viewer. So even though the photo viewer goes ahead and adds a rule which says that it delegates access to all, read access to all files marked with the private tag, Shutterfly would not get access to those because the viewer did not have read access to those files in the first place. As I mentioned before, the file system manager maintains this table of delegation rules and computes the transitive delegations and applies the access control on every request going through the file system. The access control API consists of three calls here: add and remove delegation, add and remove the rules from the table, and get delegation returns the list of all the delegations applied to a particular principal. Now that we know how access control works, I'm going to describe how the FS manager sets up a single file system. To set up a file system, the file system manager needs the information about the file system, including the URL at which the file system JavaScript code is present and the credentials to access the file system. So since it's cumbersome for the user to enter this information on every session, we store this information in a file called a mount point file in a special format. And any application can add a mount point as long as it can create this mount point file. Since this mount point file can contain sensitive information, for example, the credentials, the file system manager exports an encrypt API using which the application can encrypt the data before it stores in the file system, stores it in the mount point file, and only the FS manager can decrypt it while it's doing the mounting process. So we've seen one example of a file system in which an application like Flickr can export a part of its storage to the BStore using the BStore API. We can imagine other types of file systems. For example, a storage provider like Amazon can export its provider of Amazon file system potentially backed by a backend like S3. And the user can have an account on this file system and use it for shared storage for all her applications. We call these file systems with the storage backend as storage file systems. BStore also supports file systems which do not have a storage backend, for example, an encryption file system, which encrypts all data present on it, encrypts all data going through it, and uses another file system as the backing store, for example, the Amazon file system. This is very much like loopback devices in Unix. We call these file systems as layered file systems. So to illustrate this with an example, let's say a financial application like Mint wants to store its data on encrypted on the file system. Its request is forwarded by the file system manager to the encrypt file system, which then encrypts the data and stores it on Amazon FS. BStore can also support local file systems which can use local storage, browser local storage for storing the data. On to implementation, the core components, the JavaScript components consisting of FS manager, file manager, totally comprise 2,400 lines of code, and our file systems, including the storage file system and encrypt file system that I've already described. And we have a checkpointing file system which allows the user to checkpoint the underlying file system before running an application, and after the application is run, allows the user to roll back if she so chooses. The browser-side JavaScript components talk to each other using PostMessage, which is a cross-domain communication mechanism. Our prototype supports both Firefox and Google Chrome today, and as I said, no browser modifications. And the backend and the frontend for the storage file system talk to each other using XML HTTP request post. To evaluate BStore, we asked ourselves two questions. One is, what is the effort involved in porting existing applications to BStore? And second is, what is the performance overhead in BStore over existing mechanisms that applications use? So we ported 3 applications to use BStore. Overall, the amount of so the first one is a photo editor, second is a VI application written in JavaScript, and third is a small spreadsheet application. Porting them took, we had to modify less than 5% of the code, and it took less than a day per application to port over. And the modifications are pretty localized because the data access part and portion of this code is like very, very localized to a little part of the code. To compare BStore performance evaluation, we compared, so the paper contains a lot more evaluations on comparing BStore with XML HTTP request GET, but here I'm going to focus on the GET call, comparing with XML HTTP request GET. And experimental setup consists of Firefox browser running BStore on one machine connected to a storage FS on another machine over a local network, and we have also simulated wide area networks of 10 megabits per second and 1 megabit per second. From the experiment results here show the relative times of BStore compared to XHR GET and normalized to XHR GET here at 100%. And we see that over the local network, its BStore overhead is about 60% and reduces down to like less than 2% on a 1 megabits network. The most of the overhead is inside the browser for encoding and decoding messages as they're passed through in the browser. And on a local network, the browser overhead dominates, whereas on a slower network, on a more realistic network, the network overhead dominates. So we have a lot more evaluations in the paper that you can take a look at. So currently, we have a few limitations. Our model principles are limited by the same origin policy, which means we cannot support serverless JavaScript applications, or we cannot support cross user sharing. If you can allow for browser modifications, we can extend BStore to support those. And BStore supports a get-set interface, which means if applications need another interface like a DB interface, we wouldn't be supporting them. And similarly, applications that need a lot of server-side computations are not suited for BStore. On to related work, I've already talked about server-side sharing in the context of web services API and OAuth, and BStore has been designed to solve the limitations with those. Client-side, there's been some recent paper on the client-side sharing by Su and Chen, which have vision very similar to BStore. There are several limitations with their work with which BStore addresses. And tagging as a mechanism for file organization has been used before in the context of other systems. BStore uses tagging not just for organization, but also for access control, and we disambiguate different principles, disambiguate the tags using the creating principle. So to summarize, our current web application storage model constrains users and application developers and makes it difficult for applications to share data with each other. And we've designed a browser-based storage system to address these limitations using several key ideas, including browser-based sharing, common API, and tag-based rights delegation. Our prototype works in unmodified browsers and has reasonable overhead. Thank you, and I can take questions at this time.
So using post message to communicate the data, which means post message uses only strings. So you have to, for images, you may have to put them into data URLs or something.
That's where a lot of the overhead goes, like actually stringifying and parsing back the data when you.
So would a possible design alternative be to choose a common URL for the images that are being shared and then exploit the browser's cache to achieve the sharing between these applications? Which would avoid that overhead and which leverage the existing cache? Have you considered this alternative?
The browsers, issues with it? The browser's cache would still be protected by the same origin policy. So two different applications will not be.
If you choose the same URL, let's say through some shared domain that you assign on the back end.
Yes, that works for image, but. It wouldn't work for other applications that we're thinking of, where documents and we are thinking of a general data model, not just images. So sharing other kinds of data wouldn't be possible using that.
Hello, Dan Peek, Facebook. So I'm a big fan of the whole distributed file systems approach to this. But one thing I do know from experience is that it's a lot easier to build a file system that has only a single client. become very common for users to have multiple browsers, mobile phones, home desktops, work desktops, laptops, and so forth. So how could you give us any insight into how this kind of this system would function in a multiple browser environment?
That's actually a very good question. So in the multiple browser environment or multiple device environment, what happens is the file system would have to you have to have some way of doing concurrency control, like multiple applications accessing the data at the same time. And so that's one of the reasons, one of the motivations for us to have this versioning scheme, which allows an application to detect that another application has actually changed the data. And at that time, the application would, it depends on the application to figure out what it wants to do at that point of time. Some applications might be fine overwriting it. Some applications will actually take the diff and, like, you know, do something else with it, et cetera.
Hi, my name is Bill Zeller. I have a question about authentication. How does FS Manager send the username and password to the server-side API?
So right now, FS Manager does not send it directly to the server. It sends it to, so in the case of our example, it sends it to the Flickr FS.
How does it pass that?
Passes it on using post message as an RPC and says, okay, this is the credentials that the user has asked me to initialize you with. And at that point, Flickr FS can use those credentials to talk to its backend and authenticate itself.
So it doesn't do an XHR to the server.
No.
It
has the FS Manager doesn't do any XHR.
It has a separate frame open where it communicates between
them. Right.
Ben Lifshitz, Microsoft Research. So you emphasize the fact that you don't rely on any browser modifications, right? So which means that you have a pretty big client-side library, over 2,000 lines of code. Have you thought about possibilities of code injection on the client, like client-side cross-site scripting? Is that an issue for you?
In what sense?
Well, you have user code running on the client in JavaScript. You also have your library. The two can interact in a very interesting ways.
So each of these pieces of code is running in its own browser window. So they wouldn't be like able to inject across these windows.
So even through post message, for instance.
Even through post message, right? Because the client side, as long as the receiver of the post message sanitizes and doesn't have a vulnerability. If the receiver has a vulnerability, like because it's not handling post message very well, then there's a problem. But as long as it's able to take the RPC, which is we write an RPC library on top of post message, and as long as it's handling the RPCs fine, then it's okay.